The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol. If that wasn't enough, we also welcome to the program Don Hutchinson and Gab Marcotti here as well as we kick things off in the Champions League. Inter Milan in action against Liverpool. In the end, it was all about a second half performance from Jurgen Klopp's side. Two goals from Firmino, Salah as well, meaning that they take a 2-0 lead back to the second leg at Anfield. Stevie, overall, I suppose you have to assess this performance from Liverpool. It'll be, what, clinical?
Well, they got it done. They did enough. They always looked as though they had another gear. And I thought that, probably 5 minutes in, I thought, you know what, if Liverpool really needed to do something here, I think they always had the gear in hand to change it up. Yes, Inter hit the bar.
Yep.
But the truth is, Liverpool are in a different league to this Inter side. And as much as Inter probably won't see it that way, I think Liverpool were the best side overall.
2-0 flat at Liverpool though, a little bit though, Craig?
Yeah, a little bit, because they didn't play particularly well. And, you know, Calhanoglu hit the bar, and then there was a couple of efforts in the second half, particularly with balls over the top. Not great defending on a couple of occasions, particularly Trent Alexander-Arnold. Mm. But yeah, Stevie said, I mean, Liverpool, by their standards, did not play anywhere near the best and yet got the job done, which is, I think, a concern for the second leg for Inter Milan.
The substitutions that Klopp made in the second half paid off, didn't they, Don?
They did. I thought that was the difference. I mean, I think between both boxes, I thought Inter Milan were the best side for part of an hour. I thought tactically Inter were brilliant. I thought their wing-backs pushed Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson all the way back. They couldn't get forward. And then the game was sort of on a knife edge where, you know, Liverpool had to hold on for a good period in the second half. It was backs against the wall stuff. And all of a sudden they got the goal and then Jurgen Klopp turned to the bench and Henderson had a brilliant half an hour or 20 minutes when he was on the pitch. He was very calm. Luis Diaz was direct, so you could get the ball to him. You could take the full-backs on and take the back a little bit. And then even late on, he went to James Milner. So I think the strength and depth that Liverpool had just shaded it. I thought Konate and Van Dijk in the back were exceptional, but Inter played their part. I thought they were really good.
You're right.
No.
If that's, all right, if that's, you, what
if
you
that's if, seriously, if that's Inter playing really good, I wouldn't like to see them playing poorly.
Well,
I mean, come on. Like, the game was a bit of a snooze fest, let's be honest. We were sat in the room watching it and we were like, this is a little bit... A little bit drab. It just they never looked like there was going to be an upset.
Right.
Never.
Was that Gab laughing?
Aye. Well, sure it was. Well, it depends what you think very good is, doesn't it?
Go on, Gab.
Well, I don't know. I mean, to me, very good is teams... I do agree, and Klopp said so afterwards, that Liverpool weren't at their best tonight. I think it's also because... Inter, I thought, played really well right up to their finishing. You made it seem before. Maybe I misheard. Maybe my TV here looks different than the one you guys watch in Bristol. But look to me like it wasn't just the Çalhanoğlu hitting the ball off the crossbar. It was also the cross from Perisic where Lautaro failed to connect. There was also Konate needing that brilliant tackle on Dzeko. There were other opportunities as well. This idea that, you know, Inter were just flailing about and putting on a Muppet show and then Liverpool could have kicked it up at any gear. I don't know. I listened to what Klopp and Van Dijk had to say after the game and they all said it was really, really tough and it was clinical and so on.
I never said they were acting like a bunch of Muppets. I did say that I thought Liverpool had another gear. But maybe the problem was I'm sitting watching it and I'm thinking, how are Inter going to score here? Because the way you can beat Liverpool is by getting balls in behind them because they have such a high line And then that causes them problems. It's what happened against Burnley at the weekend. You know, that's where their Achilles heel is.
Right.
How are you going to do that when you've got Edin Dzeko and Martinez up front? They ain't running away from anybody. So maybe half the problem was I'm watching it thinking, there's no way they're going to score.
Don?
Well, I mean, you could look at it that way. They did come close on several occasions.
They didn't score. I never felt they were going to score.
No, I think so. No, I agree with you. Stevie. When you watch Inter, you thought, at the end of the day, when you think, well, in my opinion anyway, and I think judging my social media, I think Konate and Van Dijk are probably the best two players on the pitch for Liverpool. No, I would agree with that, Stevie. I think Liverpool's best two players were Konate and Van Dijk. I thought they were. Alisson wasn't really troubled. No shots on target. But as I said before, between boxes, I thought Inter were the best side. I thought Perisic was brilliant. I thought Dumfries at times were taking Andy Robertson all the way back. And I think if you go to just shy of the hour mark, they were, I wouldn't say peppering Liverpool's goal, but they had all the ball in offensive areas and Liverpool struggled. I mean, Liverpool's midfield tonight for the first time in a long while, the distances were too big to try and get out wide.
You've just said Alisson had nothing to do, pretty much.
Yes, but Stevie, a team can still dominate another team without getting shots off. Do you not agree?
Well, come on. We're just sat here. What's the game all about?
You know. No, I know. But Liverpool's away from home. There's a 90-minute game going on. And you evaluate the game.
It was an easy game.
Liverpool were
coasting.
Inter were the best side.
Alisson's had nothing to do all night.
I agree.
Well, so if the opposition goalies had nothing to do all night, you haven't done that great a job, have you? Come on.
Go on, Craig.
It wasn't a great game, I have to say. I mean, it was a bit better in the second half, but with discussion aside here, who were at home, who played okay, Inter, who had one shot, we'll call it on target, the stats people are not, because it hit the framework, and didn't have another shot on target, and lost 2-0. Am I missing something here?
What were the reaction in Italy be to this, Gav?
But the reaction, I think, is that they felt that based on their performance, I mean, they agree that Inter should have taken their chances that they had. They disagree with the assessment that, you know, it's worthless unless you actually get the shot on target, because obviously, you know, somebody can hit a lame shot from 30 yards out straight to the goalkeeper's hands into. It's weird because I'm kind of attacking the stats people here, which normally on the other side. But yeah, look, that counts as a shot on target. Great. You know, whereas, you know, you could do really well to get into good position and score it just wide. And that's not a shot on target. But no, the general sense is that actually Inter played well. And I think, you know, you have to put this in context. Liverpool are 9 points, 6 points if they win their game in hand, behind Manchester City, who right now are in a different stratosphere. They have far more European experience. They have far better players. They're a better team with a better coach. So the fact that Inter, who are a bit demoralized now with some of the recent results, like you showed in the derby against Milan, and have all the insecurities, and who have a new coach this season, and who lost their best player, and their second best player, and their third best player was suspended for this game, they went out there, they showed no fear, they created all sorts of problems with those switches out to the fullbacks, and then maybe they can't finish. Because guess what? Lukaku's not there anymore. Ronaldo's not there anymore. You have Dzeko and Lautaro Martinez. That's the reality. They feel good about themselves. So, you know, if you look at it from that perspective, to be told that it was boring and Liverpool were coasting throughout. I mean, Liverpool didn't have a shot on target either until the 75th minute, until a freaking set piece. Klopp himself said afterwards he put on Henderson and Keita precisely because of what Don said, because they were really struggling in the middle of the park. So I don't think Liverpool's game plan was not to have a shot on target either. I think we can give a little bit of credit to Inter while acknowledging that Liverpool are a better team and they scored the goals, so they get the points and deservedly so.
Well, it kind of sounds like I was expecting a bit more than what the Italians were.
Right.
I was expecting more. So maybe I started in the wrong place. Maybe I shouldn't have expected
more. Well, it's funny because I was expecting more from Liverpool. Maybe I should have, having seen Liverpool's performance against Burnley, having seen Liverpool's performance before that.
But by the way, but they never got a shot on goal. But other than that, they did really well. Because Liverpool are almost the best team in the land because they're just behind Man City. I started with the wrong expectations then, clearly.
Liverpool, I don't think we're coming off good performances. I don't think that was a good performance against Burnley. That was one where they gutted it out and were cynical in winning it. You could make the same point about the win against Leicester as well, the 2-0. So maybe it's not surprising that right now we're not seeing Liverpool firing in all cylinders. I think it's okay to say that, and I think it's undoubtedly true. But I also think that some credit has to go for the way Inter played. When you are without your three best players from last season and without your title-winning coach who left to go to Spurs, I think it's a big deal that you can retrench, that you can come back, and, you know, until the 70th minute, I think, had the upper hand, at least in terms of the run of play, against Liverpool. I don't think that means that Inter are terrible.
Let's focus on the other side that we saw in action today. Almost a big upset. Salzburg taking on Bayern Munich. This one 1-0 for the majority of the game, but a late equaliser for the German champions would see it finish 1-1. Adamu with the opener for Salzburg, and then Kingsley Coman late on would get that equaliser for Bayern. Now, this was a fun game, Gab. End-to-end stuff. Could have actually gone either way, really.
Could have. I actually thought it was more likely that it would go Salzburg's way at one point. Obviously, Adamu, brilliant layoff from Aaron. I'm blanking on his last name now, but the American boy who used to play for the Philadelphia Union to go and set that up. Salzburg did what Salzburg do. They went at them with intensity. They were very, very, I thought, really aggressive in their press. They lost Okafor early on. I thought at that point, I'm like, all right, it's going to be tough. But they weathered that. And Bayern, again, I think defensively, perhaps certainly not where they want to be. Everybody's going to point the finger at Süle because he's big and he stands out. And he's, you know, supposedly on his way to Dortmund at the end of the season. But I don't think he got much help from the other guys at the back, especially Pavard, although he did supply the cross for the equalizer. So in the end, you know, if you're Bayern, you're like, okay, let's turn this around. But to the outside world, it does feel as if Manuel Neuer deciding to have his knee injury when he did was maybe slightly, just a tiny, tiny bit presumptuous about the threat that Salzburg posed.
Got any concerns about Bayern going forward, Craig? Obviously, they're going to advance here. Like, they're in the conversation, aren't they, to go all the way in this tournament behind Liverpool and Manchester City?
Well, they haven't won the league yet, but
it's 6 points in it.
It's not going to be long, because Dortmund did win after Bayern lost it to Bochum. Defensively, I think in this competition, absolutely, 100%. I think Nagelsmann will be the same. But they have time to, potentially time to put that right, barring a disaster. I think it's 2 weeks, this big
yes,
game.
Yes, yeah, it'll be next month, yeah.
It gives them time to try and fix it, whether it's personnel or shape or whatever. But defensively, yeah, I mean, that is a big concern if you come up against a stronger team than Salzburg.
Your man Süle, Stevie.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with Gab. You can't just lump it all on him because he's getting absolutely no cover in particular from anywhere around him.
Right.
And so the only way you fix this, in my opinion, is if you're Nagelsmann, you decide how your back line is going to start, whether it's going to be four or three, and then you stick with it and you work on it and you get them in training and you work on all these things, the covering and the crossing and the pressing and when to drop. And it's the only way to fix it. But the most important one, in my opinion, is to decide who's playing, particularly the centre-back positions, if it's two or three, and then work on it. Because against better sides, they will come unstuck.
A Bayern third favourites, Don?
Listen, I would never rule Bayern out because I think they can turn it on at any given time, Dan, especially as they go deeper into the competition. They're just a winning machine and they grow and they get confidence. They've got it all on because Salzburg are a decent side, but I'd put them in the bracket. I think they're slightly behind Man City and Liverpool if you're trying to write them all down on paper and which ones you think strong. and which one you think might be a little bit weaker, but I wouldn't be foolish enough to write Bayern out of it just yet.
Just a reminder, the Bundesliga then continues here on ESPN this weekend. Just check out Sunday, really, is where it's all at with regards to German football. It's Bayern Munich against Fürth. That's at 9:30 Eastern on ESPN+, immediately followed by Borussia Dortmund against Borussia Mönchengladbach. Be sure to check that out.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's been a tough defence of their title, hasn't it, for Atleti, but Wednesday had to be rock bottom for Diego Simeone's side, losing at home against a Levante team who'd only won one game previously to today's match. That is then two wins for the side that still remain bottom of the table. For Atleti, well, they remain fifth in the table, Barcelona above them, but they are in absolute free fall at the moment, and this has got to be close to rock bottom for them, Craig. We've seen a lot of Atleti this season, haven't we? And they have not impressed. Obviously, we've seen some late wins against Valencia, against Getafe. But this is embarrassing today.
Yeah, we saw some of those late wins and you thought, right, OK, you know, maybe that's the spark. But no. When they went into the Barcelona game, his team selection was dubious at best. They got an absolute pasting on the field. I mean, they were awful. They were poor again. At the weekend, he doesn't know his best team. You know, João Félix, in, out, yep. As usual, back on the bench. Suarez on the bench now. Correa came in, did a really good job for him. Then he got left out a couple of weeks ago. That was a head-scratcher. Him and Cunha came on in that Valencia game. Literally won the game for them, along with Hermoso, the left-back. And before you know it, all those three players are out the side. It's everything that's been good about what he's done there at the moment has gone. The shape. They've been hard to beat. Everything that we associate this Atleti side has been successful to a certain extent under Simeone has gone out the window. And I think you saw with him walking down the tunnel there at the end of this one, he's almost like at a loss to put it right. But he's got support.
Yes.
He's got backing. I mean, when they were 2-0 down against Valencia at home, there was no booing.
No.
There was no getting
he's
on
got
his
money in the bank. Obviously.
He's still got money in the bank. He's got plenty of money in the bank, but it just looks like he hasn't got at the moment the answer in terms of his team selection.
What's incredible, Gab, when you take it back to the start of the season, we were talking about favourites to win the title. You looked at Real Madrid. They'd lost Varane, they lost Sergio Ramos. We thought, well, they're going to be in trouble. Obviously, Barcelona losing Lionel Messi. We thought that it was going to be difficult for them to put in any sort of run of form. So you looked at Atleti, you thought, well, they're the most organised. They've still got that same team together that won La Liga last year. Yet the defence of their title has just fallen apart at the seams and then some.
Yeah, no question about it. And you know, Dan, a lot of the focus with Atleti has been either defensively, where everybody's seen the stat about how, you know, they've already conceded more goals this season than in any of Diego Simeone's previous seasons. That obviously hasn't helped. But equally, I think they've been just as difficult to deal with up front. Because for all the big names and, you know, Suarez and Griezmann and João Félix and Mateus Cunha coming in and Ángel Correa, who, you know, saved them down the stretch last season, it's, you know, Craig said he doesn't know his best 11. It's not necessarily a bad thing if you can rotate and get the fresh guys in there and maintain the spirit, but these players are just so different. And I don't think it's a coincidence where he's rotated the least has been midfield, but really that hasn't worked either. And so it seems that when they win, it's down to individuals, and when they lose, it's the collective. Ideally, if you're going to be a successful team, it ought to be the other way around.
Well, just a reminder, La Liga on ESPN throughout the season. Let's take a look at what's coming up this weekend. Real Madrid in action against Alaves is the late game on Saturday. That's live on ABC. Meanwhile, preceding that, Osasuna against Atleti. Big game then in Pamplona. That's at 10:15 Eastern on ESPN+. Then on Sunday at Mestalla, Valencia take on Barcelona. The late game, the Basque Derby, Athletic Club against Real Sociedad. Lots of positive reaction, as you'd imagine, in France to PSG's 1-0 victory over Real Madrid. L'Equipe going, of course, it's him again, Messi. Messi is the pun there. Marca, how good is Mbappe? He is the bomb. This is what Carlo Ancelotti had to say about Mbappe after the game. The best in Europe today, unstoppable. We try to control him, double up on him, but he can always invent something. What's been interesting from the Madrid media talking about the fallout from this game, reports are that Florentino Perez not happy, embarrassed by the performance that Real Madrid put in, that the defensive showing wasn't up to what you'd expect from the club, Gab. And there's talk, obviously, because it's Real Madrid and they've just been beaten by PSG, that Pochettino could be the man that Florentino Perez could try and get in the summer to replace Carlo Ancelotti.
I find this whole Pochettino thing hilarious. There you are, you're in Paris where you've lived before, you're a hero there, you just got there, you get to every day you come into training and, you know, when they're not injured or when one of them's sister isn't having her birthday, you get to show up and you get to play with, you get to work with Messi, Mbappe, and Neymar. And yet, your team is a zoo and you keep sending out messages about how, oh, look, Manchester United, well, they're interested in me. Oh, look, maybe Real Madrid. Oh, the senior players at United would love to have Pochettino. Look, Real Madrid. I mean, I find this absolutely extraordinary. Not because United and Real Madrid aren't bigger teams than Paris Saint-Germain. We can debate this. But, dude, you just got there. How about you try to do something impressive with these generational players that you have now before you make sure that your name gets into the press and papers around the world? And make no mistake about it. You know, this isn't Florentino waking up and saying like, oh, I don't like Carlo anymore. Let me look at Pochettino. These are other people, I think, putting his name in the frame.
I would urge Florentino Perez to try and watch Real Madrid every week and then not be surprised by the way they played, because they've not been playing well.
No.
They've been getting enough results, and for a long time Ancelotti kept the same side, and then, you know, it was consistently, it wasn't quite almost the same 11, but it was pretty much close for a while. Then you thought, well, you had to give Modric a rest, and, you know, Marcelo comes in, he was creaking at the weekend against Villarreal, there was no way he could have played. So it is, you know, the job that Ancelotti's doing there, with the problems that they had, they were not as big a problems as Barcelona, but they still lost Varane and Ramos and all the other sort of issues. It's been a pretty good job. There should be no surprise that they went there and really performed the way that they did. Talk to us when the second leg's done.
Right.
Talk to us when, you know, if Real Madrid are out and say, well, we're disappointed. But they've not been playing brilliantly for a good, well, even before the small winter break, they were not playing.
No. Nope.
Getting some results.
There's flashes, but
there was
no
flashes from Vinicius. There was Benzema carrying the team for a long time until he got injured. And then he tried to play Gareth Bale through the middle. Yeah. And he doesn't fancy Jovic. He's threw Hazard in on the odd occasion. He's searching for something that he might need if Benzema just crumples.
Right.
So the fact that Florentino Perez is saying, oh, this is a disaster, or, well, you know, we don't play, we are Real Madrid, we play better than that. Try watching him every week.
Tactically, what did he get wrong?
I think he's obviously overdone it leading up to the game with this defensive strategy. There's nothing wrong with when you lose the ball, you get into a 4-5-1 posture. There's nothing wrong with that. There's a fine dividing line, though, when you're coaching between over-emphasising about defending.
Right.
You have to balance it up by repeatedly, every time you say about shape, you go, and when we get it, we open up and play. You have to balance it both ways. You can't just talk about defending, because clearly they talked about it a lot. When they lost the ball, they got into that posture. But for some reason, as experienced as this side pretty much is, it forgot to go forward. and couldn't get out.
Is that because they had no outlet, because Benzema wasn't fit?
I certainly wouldn't say that he was 100% fit, because he's not. But I don't think his fitness had anything to do with this performance. I think you could have stopped Pelle or anybody you wanted up front, and they would have failed to get him the ball, because they couldn't string passes to get it out the back. Listen, you've got to give some credit to PSG, by the way.
Yeah.
The one thing we said, that the front three don't defend from the front, well, they did in this game, and that made it really difficult for Madrid. But no, I think it was an attitude problem to start the game, that they couldn't pick it up.
Do you agree, Don?
Yeah, I was watching the game, Dan, and I just thought when Benzema wasn't 100% fit, I was watching the midfield players and the amount of times they were trying to play sort of square passes between themselves because they didn't want to either bang it into Benzema's feet or turn PSG around and ask Benzema to run the channel because he wasn't fit and he was probably petrified that his hamstring might go. So he was trying to sort of ease himself into the game. I think Pochettino is a little bit clever or fortunate, depends how you see it, when Kylian Mbappe works on that left-hand side and he's just an unbelievable player when you watch him. The right side of Real Madrid didn't have enough legs. I felt for Carvajal because he tried his utmost to try and go 1v1 with him. When Militao come across to put the cover on, he'd done really well. But the midfield player at the three on the right-hand side for Real Madrid was Luka Modric. You can't expect Luka Modric to try and get out to Mbappe and double up against Carvajal. So the right was on the wall, really. I thought, and it wasn't in hindsight, I thought he probably should have started Valverde, probably had more legs in midfield. But they scored late. I mean, when it was 0-0 towards, 86, 87 minutes, you're thinking, Real Madrid will take this. They'll take a 0-0, and then you'd probably fancy them to beat them in the second leg. But now they've got it all on.
No, I don't fancy them. But, you know, talk about Militao coming out. He came out at the end and made a hash of it.
Yes.
It was Lucas Vázquez. But once he comes out...
Militao,
we talked about, yeah, Militao. Once he comes out to help Vázquez, knowing how sharp Mbappe's been, he can't just dangle a leg. He has to... That's when you've got to have the communication. You've
right.
got to get yourself in a better position and say, listen, you make sure he doesn't go down the wing. I'll cover here. As I said yesterday, if he cuts back inside Mbappe towards the edge of the box and whips it in the top corner, fine.
Right.
Hey, he's got to go somewhere, hasn't he? But not through the middle.
No, but you're scared. The problem is you're scared. You don't want to be too tight because you know how quick his feet are. And you certainly don't want to be too far off because then he can come inside and stick it in the top corner. So you're talking about communication. If it's not 100% and there is a gap, he'll find it. And he found the gap. You know, we could put the blame on both players. But the truth is, when you're up against somebody that good and you're in your own penalty box and they're coming at you, you're scared stiff. His quality was really what swung it in the end.
Well, Carvajal had it on his own for long periods.
Oh, did he ever?
First half.
No, I'm sure a lot more from what we've seen over the last couple of days in the Champions League on the latest edition of the Gavin and Jules podcast, which drops on Thursday. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Meanwhile, Antonio Conte in the news after some interesting quotes about Spurs' January transfer window. Here's what he had to say. What happened in January was not easy. We lost four important players and only brought in two rather than reinforced the squad. On paper, we weakened it. Bentancur, Kulusevski are ideal prospects for Spurs, but because Tottenham are seeking young players, they can develop and grow, not players who are ready. This is the issue. If you want to be competitive more rapidly, you need players with a lot of experience because they also raise the experience level of the overall team. I have realised now this is the vision of the club.
Oh. Well, I mean, yeah, it's not going his way. He's got a coach on the training field as well, but, you know, Kulusevski's 21, I'll give you that, but he has played 20 times for Sweden. He has played numerous games for Juventus. But don't tell me, now, you can like Bentancur, or you can be a fan or not a fan, or think he's not, didn't play particularly well in the end for Juventus, or whatever. But he's 24 years old, and he's got almost 50 caps for Uruguay.
Right.
He's not a teenager.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if this just was a case of he didn't want these players. I don't know. I don't have the answer. Whether he wanted them or wanted others or whatever. But clearly, and we've said this all along, this was going to be a difficult place to go into and have his way of thinking, as my old manager, Wim Jansen, used to say, my way of thinking and his way of thinking, i.e. Right. Daniel Levy and the ownership. And clearly, we have a different viewpoint here. And I think he's also clearly evaluated the squad. And he knows what he's got and what he hasn't got.
Didn't he know that before, though?
Well, but you know what you've got.
That's a false question.
But you before you go into your club, you always think you know what you've got as a squad.
Right.
But then you get in and you train with the players, and then you really find out when you see them playing exactly the strengths and weaknesses, the attitude, you know, who works hardest, who turns up, who can do it for me, all that kind of thing. So he's clearly assessed the whole thing properly now from the inside. And he, in his mind, it seems to me, he thinks it's a major problem.
I think there's a difference between that, Craig, and then coming out at this time of the season and saying, now I understand the vision. Seems a little strange for a guy who's so organised, who supposedly has a handle on everything he wants to do, and certainly to change what he has in his hand right there and then. The other thing is, if I'm a Spurs fan, and we're talking about, well, we're not going to buy anybody who's ready to play, I'm like, hold on a second. So what are we doing here?
Right.
It's one thing, it sounds great. Oh, we have a vision of young players. But you need players that are ready. If you want to get in the top four, you're going to have to buy at least two or three players that are ready. Not kids. No happening.
Classic Conte, Gab?
I'm frankly befuddled. And I'm wondering whether he's trying to sort of play five-dimensional chess here or something, because he cannot use to come out and say, oh, now I understand what the club's vision is. Oh, really? Because, you know, if only there was somebody working at the club who was the director of football, who you've known for 15 years and who hired you for the job, who might have explained it to you. That would be Fabio Paratici. I'm going to go out on a limb. I wasn't in the room, but I'm going to go on a limb and say, and then suggest that when Paratici spoke to Conte, he said, oh, look, our owner, Levy, you know, he likes to build slowly with kids and so on. He's not going to go and cut 100 million pound checks. I would hope that Paratici explained it to him, or that Conte could have done some Googling beforehand on Tottenham's situation. When he comes out and he says, this is the other thing which really gets me, you know, stuff that you say in one country gets picked up in another country. When you come out and you say that you lost four important players in January and you only brought two players in, I'd love to know who those four important players are, because as far as I know, you're talking about Dele Alli, who he didn't like. You're talking about Ndombele, who he liked even less. These are guys who didn't play very much. You're talking about Brian Heal, who made a total of zero starts under Conte. So who are all these important players who left? They are Kane and Son, and you know those guys are still there, right? So I don't understand if he's trying to go and he thinks Levy's going to respond well to this and be like, oh, Conte's upset. You know, I better give him assurances I'm going to spend in the summer or what. You knew what you were getting into. People believed in you. Now go ahead and do the best you can with this group of players.
What a mess, Don.
I think it's a classic case, Dan, of the manager, Antonio Conte, deflecting away from three losses on the spin. We talked on the show the other day, me and Craig, about would you trust Tottenham to beat Wolves? And we all said no. Look what happened there. And I think he's deflecting, probably afraid of what's happening at the weekend when they've got Man City. And I think he's probably just getting his ducks in a row, trying to prepare for a walloping against Man City. And then the bigger questions are going to come. Does he stay on in the summer? Because the noises that he's making doesn't suggest to me that he's overall happy and going to be happy to stay on, because, as he said, the project's not the project's not the same between him and Daniel Levy, but as Gab said, he would have known this all along.
The guy that beat him, I might be wrong, I'm back and think about signings, but Bruno Lage came in to Wolves. I don't think there's been many signings, to my knowledge. Lost Traore to Barca, all right, he wasn't playing regular under him. But he's talked about coaching.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of his interviews, he's talked about what he's trying to do and his coaching and stuff. And they're not out of the running to get in this top four. I mean, they're very organised. You know, I've said quite a lot, I don't think Conte's a bad coach. No, I'm not saying that for 1 minute. I've always been concerned, and I think most of the boys have, about the longevity of this.
Yeah.
And I've always felt that somebody, a different approach to somebody like, for example, and I keep saying this, a longer-term approach for Spurs, if this is their mentality, with somebody like Graham Potter, who I firmly believe will eventually move from Brighton, who are an excellent club and they run well, but I think he will step up, and I think it's a longer-term approach.
Right.
It's a more patient approach, and I just don't think Conte has the patience for this kind of management of a football club when others are going out there spending. And even though he is a good coach, I think he wants to coach and spend, not just the first part. And I think at Tottenham, you're probably only going to get the first part in the main.
We'll be getting Don's prediction, of course, as a percentage, on Wolves finishing in the top four on extra time. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Faultless, I would say it has been. We will be back tomorrow for more.
I'd agree with that.
Be sure to stay tuned, though, as Extra Time is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Stephen Craig here in the studio. Gab's in. Don.
That's what
Don.
I'm going to do from now on.
What's that? Take his shot sheets.
When I get his shot sheets, what? I'm going to throw them.
I woke up to a WhatsApp message from Don Hutchinson asking how people can get their questions on Extra Time. Thanks for that, Don. I don't choose the questions.
No, it wasn't me. It was someone who asked me. He said, "Well, why does Dan always pick the same texters and the same emailers? Any chance of getting me on?" I went, "I'll have a word with the big cheese."
Did you think he picked
I don't pick the questions, Don. Far too busy. No time for that.
Wait, Don, we have a department.
Yes, a whole department.
The department, they're hiring as we speak.
I felt there was a bit of friction early on between you two and there, and me and Gab, over the Inter-Liverpool game. Bit of friction, bit of needle.
Well, there you are.
I just sat out of it.
Not everyone can see the same thing. Right. Craig, United drew against bottom of the table Burnley. Atleti lost to bottom of the table Levante. Their Champions League fixture is truly a match made in heaven. Both have a great squad but constantly failing to deliver.
No.
Who's winning the fixture?
I wouldn't say great squad.
Right.
It's funny, it's a game between, actually, I think it's tilting in favour of Man United at the moment.
It's the best of a bad bunch, isn't it?
A few weeks ago, I didn't think I'd be saying that. Yeah. I mean, if Atleti keep playing the way they are, yeah,
And Man United keep winning the way they are.
I mean, yeah, United at least are doing something.
Are
they? That is shocking.
Yeah, I mean, at least if Ronaldo starts hitting the back of the net again after his drought, small drought, stuff like that.
So we'll reduce.
I mean, it should be a cracker.
We'll reduce the ifs, ands, and maybes.
We are ifs, ands, and maybes.
If somebody puts the boots
it's
on.
It's like
the right
maybe,
feet.
Maybe should I eat the bun that McDonald's give me, or should I bring my own bread from home, toss the bun out, and put it on the patty? Who would do that, Stevie?
Sounds completely normal.
So this was the site that we were here on to.
You're already in. I walk in just before the game starts.
I don't get it.
And on the table, let me just explain. On the table, there is a bunch of fries sprawled out, and there's a bun open, but nothing in it. And then there's bread, and I say, what the hell's that? He went, I brought me on toast to put the bun in.
Yeah.
Put the bun in, you mean the burger?
Put the burger.
It was beautiful. Then Stevie goes, how am I going to cut this in half? And then he just got it in his hand and just squashed the patty and shoved it in the press. Look at that, eh? Beautiful.
It's incredible.
It's something.
Scottish bread, Don.
Scottish bread.
Nothing. Where do you get that? Don't say Scotland.
I couldn't tell you.
Just appears. She gets it from McDonald's.
Don't know where I'm looking.
The Scottish version. Stevie.
Your buns are hopeless. No, I'm not.
Stevie, if you were managing PSG and Messi had the kind of game yesterday in contrast to Mbappe, would you have indicated to him to let Mbappe take the penalty?
Well, I would actually. Messi has missed a lot of penalties.
Yep.
And I was sitting watching it and I'm. And not for the first time, I'm thinking, I don't get the feeling when he's going to take a penalty that he's always going to score. You know, when Ronaldo steps up to take a penalty, I'm sitting there waiting. I'm figuring out who's going to run in the net and pick the ball up.
Right.
Like the one against Burnley.
I don't get that feeling.
Right.
I don't get that feeling with Messi.
Right.
So, absolutely, you would have had Mbappe taking it.
But Mbappe's missed big penalties as well, obviously, in the Euros.
Ronaldo just missed a penalty.
How much does
Sorry, you're not allowed to miss a penalty. I'm just saying that
it's an interesting question. How much does a form during the game make a difference to who you would have taken the penalty as a manager? Does it make any difference?
Well, you're not going to... Because I would assume that you've decided before the game starts.
Yes, yeah.
And you're not going to turn around and say, oh, by the way, You're not taking that.
Okay, so it doesn't affect you.
No.
Dom, what do you think?
I mean, it's one of them, isn't it, where you need a crystal ball in it. I mean, you see Messi take the penalty and you go, yeah, I fancy him. I mean, who wouldn't? I mean,
me.
You'd have to have some crystal ball to say, I'm taking Messi off the penalty and I'm giving it to Mbappe.
Everyone can miss a penalty, no?
There you are.
Is that a big problem?
Hey, even Ronaldo missed one.
Yeah, he stopped it. But the player's running the back of the net.
Don, have you ever played with...
tell him about the problems he has before the show. What did he ask you? Because he asked me.
What?
What did he ask you?
My knot's too big in my tie.
Oh, yeah, you worried that your tie was too skinny.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
Now it's over to the side.
Sorry about that. I'll take it half if you want.
No, Stevie, it looks good.
No, the knot's all right.
It looks lovely.
Yeah, thank you. Cheers.
Don, have you ever played with or against a player that looks so cool whilst playing and doesn't seem to break a sweat like Van Dijk?
Do you know what I played at West Ham with Decanio Defoe and the third man in that trio who was just ultra cool, who was so, so good, was Freddy Kanute.
Right.
And Freddy Kanute had so much talent. He was probably 6'4". He jumped about 9 feet. Incredible athlete. Silky first touch. Could run. Brought his midfield players into the game. Made the game at times look very easy. I think probably Freddie would probably come to mind. Some player.
Where are you going? Alan Hansen, Stevie? That's who I think of.
Easy peasy.
Yeah.
I mean, his strip got washed at the start of the season, and then the second time it got washed was at the end of the season.
It's smelly.
No, very dry. Very dry. Last season would be it, right?
Craig, start one, bench one, drop one.
Ooh.
Carabao Cup. UEFA Super Cup, Club World Cup.
That's just a good question, by the way.
Club World Cup, UEFA Super Cup, Carabao Cup. What's the UEFA Super Cup again?
UEFA is the winner of the Champions League against the winner of the Europa League.
Yeah, yeah.
They're pretty straightforward, don't you think?
Club World Cup.
What are you doing with that one?
Dropping it.
Dropping it. That's
yeah.
done.
Yeah.
Good question.
Hello.
UEFA Super Cup on the bench.
On bench.
And Carabao Cup.
Yes.
It's given a lot of the lower league teams an opportunity.
Do you concur?
And I'm a man of the people.
Do you concur, Gav?
Yeah, I'm with you.
No. I think I just my own viewpoint. We can point out flaws with all of these, which is why it makes for a good question. But I'm not having the League Cup. The League Cup was created purely out of greed so they could pay for the floodlights that some clubs had installed and some clubs hadn't installed. It really doesn't matter. It's only interesting if there's a couple of big clubs in the semi-final and then it gets there. The whole thing before, it was artificial when it started and it's still artificial now. And I would definitely drop them. Super Cup, probably the highest quality of the encounters. So, but I would still bench him and I would start the Club World Cup because I remember when it meant something. And I think about what it could mean.
I think that's a bit harsh. I mean,
what?
In the 80s, the League Cup was very much sought after. Let me tell you that. Huh? You know, I agree with you now that teams don't take it very seriously until the end, but all the way through the 80s, it was a big tournament to win. It was certainly players and managers wanted to win it. It was no Mickey Mouse.
But Stevie, Liverpool played in the European Cup. Liverpool played in the Football League. Liverpool played in the FA Cup. You would have those three tournaments as more important than the League Cup or the Milk Cup, I guess, as it was probably known then, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's just another tournament clogging up your fixture list.
Yeah, but it wasn't...
That you care about less than the other three.
I would agree that, yes, those other three go ahead of it. But it was... You ask anybody in the 80s that played on it, every single team played the first team, every single team was desperate to win it. So, you know...
But the Carabao Cup has become less important, but the FA Cup has become, in some sense, less important because the Champions League top four and relegation, because of the finances, particularly around the Premier League, have become so important to the businesses that it's only natural that some of these competitions will take a bit of a downturn. So, but I don't know.
Stevie, do you still have Real Madrid progressing ahead of PSG?
Ooh. Well, I got to say no, because had Casemiro not got booked and Mendy not got booked, I probably would have stuck with my prediction. But my goodness, who's going to replace them?
No. Don, percentage?
Oh.
Well, I actually predicted yesterday that PSG would win 1-0 and Real Madrid would win 2-1 on aggregate.
Oh.
I'm sticking with it.
Was that PSG before? Go for on the away goal rule?
I got a few, by the way, on social media tonight. I went, Liverpool have scored an away goal, priceless. My goodness me, the amount of people that jumped on. Don't count anymore, don't count anymore.
Well, listen, you got it. Done. Come on. Doesn't take. But still goes back to Barney Roney's great tweet, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes.
They'll be dancing in the streets of Juventus tonight. the first caller on the phone on Twitter went, it's Turin, but oh, shut up. Twitter in a nutshell. Twitter in a nutshell.
Gab, have you ever used your fame to get out of a ticket?
I've had situations where, yes, members of law enforcement have stopped me in different situations and then recognized me and then asked me about wanting to talk about football. Most recently, actually, it was just a couple months ago. I was actually outside my own house, And these two cops stopped me because they said I was looking suspicious. And they asked if they could, I didn't have anything in my pockets, could they search them? And I said, I don't think you have probable cause. So then they decided, and they admitted that they didn't have a reason to search me, but still they would then ask me a million questions. And then one of them asked them like, oh, you're the bloke off the telly. And I said, yes. And then the whole mood changed and he started to ask me a ton of questions about QPR, which is the team that he supports. So in that case, yeah, it wasn't quite a ticket, but I did use my fame after. Still had to waste about 45 minutes just for standing outside my own house. I should have just run inside and barricaded myself in.
I like the fact this is happening numerous occasions. Why do you keep finding yourselves in these sort of places, Gab, where the police want to question you?
No. It's happened, but I mean, this was just surreal because I'm literally standing outside my own house.
Stephen, there's this famous story in your book, is that right? Where you almost drove off a bridge that wasn't completed and the police gave you an escort home?
Hey!
And a boat. Well, you've mixed that up with another story. You kind of mixed the stories up.
Oh, okay,
right,
yeah.
But, yeah, I've been fortunate a couple of times.
Yes.
Got myself into some situations where...
Taking a wrong turn.
Oh, which one do you want me to tell you? The one over the bridge?
It's got to be the bridge.
I did the absolute classic. I was driving home one night. I had been out with a friend of mine called Mr. Barnes.
Right.
After a game.
Yes.
And so I was going through the tunnel, I went over a flyover. Now, we shouldn't have gone over the flyover because it said the road was closed.
Right.
But I figured at the time that there'd be nobody about and I could just go over it anyway.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when I got halfway over the bridge, I realised that half of the road had been cut away. Right. I thought I had enough room to turn the car and go back.
Yes.
And ended up hanging the car off the back of the half that was still there. And sitting going, what am I going to do now? Anyway, I was lucky because a lorry appeared with about 20 guys in it with shovels.
Right.
And they bounced me out. They bounced the back out and I went back where I came from. And went down the detour and got home.
Goodness, wow. Mate.
I know.
There you go. Mate,
very lucky.
You use your fame, Craig. Imagine in Chelsea, they'll lock you up just for walking down the road.
Oh, we need a hoodie now, Chelsea.
Hey, I think that's Burnley. Go nick him.
Sorry.
I don't care what you nick him for. Nick him.
I've got no probable cause to search you, but what did you say about the Club World Cup?
That's it.
Yeah.
Get in the back of that car. I'll tell you what, the great thing here, leaving Bristol, going home, which is not far, 20 minutes, is most of the police officers, I would imagine, are followers of American sports, particularly NBA and NFL.
Yes. Yeah.
So they know probably nothing about soccer. So every time I get stopped, but just for a speeding ticket,
yes,
I get next.
Yeah.
I never get off at once.
No.
Ticket, couple of $100, bosh.
Bosh.
Let me tell you about the soccer. That's $250.
Wait, I know Gab Marcotte.
Yeah. I know this bloke. Where's the hoodie? Right, that's $300. Keep going.
No. Don?
No, never. Never, never.
Yeah,
never.
Right.
Never, never.
I don't believe you, Don.
No, to get off a
driving
ticket.
Driving around in your Ferrari. Big time,
no.
Well, the story is in Glasgow, if you get stopped, and obviously if you get stopped by a police officer who's a Celtic fan, and you're probably going to get off, and vice versa. So I suppose it does work. It can work.
Don, what's the probability?
It doesn't bloody work here.
No, what's the probability, Don, that Diaz overtakes Mane in the first team selection, considering his performance tonight?
Ooh, on what time scale do you think? I mean, it doesn't say a time scale, does it? I think Jurgen will stay loyal to Sadio Mane. I think he will. But I'm seeing signs. I mean, I know it's ridiculously early, but even in San Siro tonight when he came on, you know, he's so direct. Jurgen Klopp talked about him. I can't remember the words that he used, but he was just saying he's like infectious
direct.
And he's like an animal. He just goes forward and he's got no fear. And it's like, that's exactly what he is at the minute. So to answer the question without sitting on the fence, he'll stay loyal to Mane, but it might just be inevitable.
Final question. Bit of Winter Olympics action. Don, Craig, Stevie and Gab, okay, envisage this.
I was watching a new one the other day.
I didn't think it was a new one as well.
Okay.
Bobsled.
Yeah. Well, this is a bobsled question.
Hey, that's not new, though, is it?
No, of course it's not.
Well, they said it was a new event.
No.
No, it's not new.
Well, it must have been something different.
One person. One person, maybe, could be the...
It was an individual.
There you go. Okay, right, so if it's a four-man bobsleigh, it's the four of you.
Yeah.
Who's the driver?
Well, not him.
Yeah.
Well, no, clearly we've learned.
I've got no sense of direction. I'd take us, I'd do a U-turn.
He'd have to print a map out.
Yes.
The way that.
MapQuest.
I'll get a lot to do that.
Who's the driver, Gab?
Ooh, I would imagine Don, because he probably drives the fanciest car out of all of us. I'm assuming he's probably better suited to higher speeds.
There you are. Don's nodding.
I'm thinking because I'm the lightest, I'd be the driver. I think you need a bit of power.
Hold on a minute.
Do you watch the bobsleigh?
How come you have affirmed yourself as the lightest here?
Well, I would take a good guesstimate.
I'm melting away here, haven't I?
Yeah.
I think you need power. Would you
be happy with Don as the driver? Would you be happy, Don, driving?
Not particularly, no.
I'm the best of a bad bunch.
Well, you need to be reckless.
Because he'd stop at... Don would stop at a gas station and somebody
give
would...
Give away the bobsleigh.
Somebody would ask him for the bobsleigh to get back to Ireland. They'd say,
I'll take a selfie.
Jamaica.
Take a selfie. We'd end up going down on our backsides.
That'd be it. There'd be a selfie of it all.
Oh, this four of them seem to be coming down. Oh, there's no bobsled.
Harry Kane's going to... that is it. We're done. Thank you very much, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow to reflect on those good Europa League matches.
Did Don's mate get his question in?
No, he didn't. No, I don't think he did.
Well, sort of.
Well, that's it. Don's let him down. He's got no power on this show. Napoli Barcelona tomorrow.